Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Welcome to the Dogpod, your home for fans of whatever remains of this University of Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm here with Lawdog. Lawdog, how you living, buddy?
Well, you know, when the Huskies don't have a coach, BT, I don't really sleep that well. I don't get stuff done at work. I mean, it's kind of a problem.
Feeling agitated. I get it. We got two more games. We got to get into the debacle that was ASU, the highs and the lows. We're heading down to Colorado this weekend on Saturday. Apple Cup's in a couple weeks. The coaching hunt is on full tilt. There's a lot to talk about. Should we get into ASU?
Yeah, I guess let's do the recap of that one, BT. Can't wait to relive it.
Let's do it. I was there in the stands on that beautiful sunny day. Let's hear about it.
Beautiful and sunny don't begin to cover my feelings about the fourth quarter of this KBT. Oh. But you know, Junior Adams coming in as the offensive coordinator, we were kind of wondering, what are we going to get? Huskies get off to a really nice start. I mean, one of the nicest starts they've had in, I don't know, 5-6 years, right?
Amazing. Amazing.
Morris finds Roma Dunze a few times on that opening drive. Cam Davis is getting the ball because McGrew's kind of banged up. He had a nice day, I thought. Punched it in. Davis punched it in for an early touchdown, and it's 7-0.
The trickeration Huskies coming down. It felt like, do you remember? So that was the beginning of the Alabama game.
Yeah.
First series. Everyone's just jacked. Who is this team?
Looked yeah, great. No, the crowd was like, really, they couldn't wait to cheer for these guys, right? And they had some reasons to here in the first. So then ASU going right back to 3-and-out. Huskies are right back at it. Morris this time finding McMillan for a nice gain. He's getting back to Rome. Another ASU penalty. That was kind of an early theme, really a theme throughout the game, I would say. Actually, it's Morris this time who runs it in. So it's 14-0 early in the first quarter here, maybe midway.
Feeling good.
Teams are trading punts. Huskies bring out Sam Heward on this third series BT. Goes 2-for-3 for 15 yards, but there was kind of that botched transfer in the backfield there. Huskies lost yardage, and they lost some field position. They had to punt it back here. ASU moving the ball down the field. They get down to the 2-yard line. Braylon Trice getting a big sack on fourth down. The Huskies turned it over. I was in the crowd screaming, begging for Herm Edwards to go for it there. I was like, please go for it. Please go for it. Got the turnover. Heward actually gets another shot here, but they're pinned deep. And they just didn't seem to committed to letting him try to move the ball. So the Huskies do punt it back. And, you know, of course, they're sacrificing field position, right, BT? But Race Porter, yep. I mean, worth mentioning, uncorks a 73-yard punt.
Unreal, and ASU's
actually starting at the 30-yard line this time. But they kind of get it going here. They start to move the ball. Jaden Daniels finds Curtis Hodges for the touchdown. So it's 14-7 Huskies just in the first half, just getting wrapping up here with 37 seconds left. But then Giles Jackson breaks a nice return at
finally,
the half.
Huskies there you go.
Across midfield, right? And Morris is able to kind of get a couple of gains there, and Henry tacks on a field goal to take a 17-7 lead into the locker room. So then in the second half, this game just got off the rails. I mean, the first half, you know, it was kind of all Huskies for the most part. But Morris fumbles on the Husky 9 in the middle of the third here. ASU tacks on a quick touchdown. It's 17-14. Then the Huskies try that fake punt. Race Porter gets lit up just short of the marker. No targeting penalty.
No targeting call. Helmet goes flying off. I mean, what?
What do you need to do in this world, right? You're a quarterback. You get touched. You know, we give you a medal, but a punter, it's like shake it off, kid. Three plays later, though, Alex Cook gets the pick off Jaden Daniels, and it's like, wait, what happened? We just gave up the ball. Huskies are in business at midfield. They run it 9 straight times here. Davis gets 7 carries, then Pleasant gets the last 2. He gets the touchdown. 24-14 now at the end of the third quarter, BT. I was holding up
feeling
the
good.
Four fingers. Like, you know, we're going to pull off an upset here. Like, this is all, you know, Junior Adams made all the difference. ASU then says, oh, yeah, remember that? We can just actually run it right down their face. And so then they take the next 20 plays to go 81 yards over 9 minutes. 16 of those run plays, including one called back on a penalty. they actually get the touchdown here with just under 6 minutes to play. They just ran off the whole fourth quarter. But it's still 24-21 Washington, so they're counting on their defense to get the ball back here. If there's ever an opportunity, a time where you want to get your offense going, it was it right here. But, I mean, this team, BT, they are what they are. Dylan Morris is who he is. I mean, his pass on third down to Taj Davis was just off the mark. Huskies have to punt it back after a three and out here. And then ASU just says, oh, only 3 minutes left in the game? No problem. I'm just going to run it seven more times and go 56 yards. And now just 1:11 to play. They have taken the lead 28-24. If you were not ticked off enough at Dylan Morris at this point, you definitely got in on the action right here, because on this last drive with 1:11 to go, he goes 1 for 4, including that pick six to Merlin Robertson, and then ASU just kind of icing it 35-24 with 32 seconds left. Of course, the Huskies do tack on a touchdown at the end, and did they even get the onside kick?
Yeah.
I was out of the stadium at this point, BT. I have to admit
they recover the onside kick. Did you see the replay of the what we all were waiting for, the Hail Mary?
Well, I was going to get to that. So then, yeah, they don't even bother throwing the Hail Mary, and ASU wins at 35-30, despite, you know, you had a chance at the end there, 1 second left to check it. And, I mean, this was one of the more painful losses of this season, actually, just because of all of the drama, all of the different dynamics going on, the program just struggling, the offense has finally shown signs of life, and then your defense really lets you down here in the fourth quarter.
It would have felt good. It really would have felt good. I would have liked to have had that happen for the team.
Would you play in these last two games with something to play for?
And now we're on this streak where, you know, we've beaten ASU like twice in the last 21 years. Right. We don't talk about that a lot.
We do on this show,
but they have had our freaking number. I don't know why we ignore that, but they've had our number and again get us this year.
Lead
the rain, in the dog weather. But like, so let me talk a little bit about that defense then. I mean, again, no surprise to no one, like rush defense struggles. And just look at that fourth quarter. Like, I don't know why they didn't do this the whole game, but 157 yards in the fourth quarter of rushing. 157 yards.
I mean, Daniels threw a couple passes, but after that interception, they basically were just like, no, we actually don't need to throw anymore, so we're not going to.
All Rashad White. Design Daniels. It wasn't even really play breakdowns. It was design runs. I noticed this time, was thing was like different versus Michigan and Oregon, is that we couldn't seal the edge. A lot of like defensive end kind of cheating on the inside, no outside linebacker to pick it up, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, streaking down 25 yards around the edge. Like the edge wasn't sealed, and our rush D really struggled all up. I think we didn't have Fatui Tuitele. I think Jake Bandis has potential, but he's definitely a two to Fatui Tuitele. I think that struggled. You mentioned Braylon Trice. I thought those two sacks were huge. I thought the DB pressure looked good. Like we had a couple sacks from the cornerbacks from Trent McDuffie, which I thought was great. So some good things, but end of the day, couldn't stop the run. Rush defense was brutal. And like pass offense, like pass defense, sure. Eight total yards to wide receivers, but they don't have to. Again, they don't have to throw.
I mean, why would you? Why would a team? And you know, Jimmy Lake wasn't on the field, and they're still, you know, refusing to put more than two down linemen on defense. And I don't understand it. Yeah, they're doing it more in the last few weeks, but. In the fourth quarter of that game, I mean, you're up by 10 points, you know?
That's when I think it was like, okay, regress back to the mean. We're up by 10. Okay, let's go back to the old playbook. You know, we've got a 10-point lead. Let's not screw this up.
You know, the other thing is neither Latuli Gassanoa, Taimani, your Tuitele up front, none of those guys are going to be first-day NFL draft picks the way you've had several of them over the last five, six years. Right, yeah. Yep. But – you know, the other thing is, okay, if you're not going to have a big power run stuffer in there, then you need to have some kind of a pass rush when they actually do drop back. And I thought this was a game where, you know, we just did not see a ton of pass rush, it felt like to me, for most of the time. Daniels was able to kind of run out and and he ran for a couple of huge conversions, and you know, it just didn't feel like there was just like we had any answers.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, this one, like giving up 35, like it's a tough day. Special teams, I thought was killer. They were great, you know.
Jackson with the big return.
Jackson with the big return
has been solid all year. Coverage has been better.
Or, you know, Porter, I think, did everything he was supposed to do. Had that nice boom and punt, and shoot, you know, it ended up not mattering. But like on covering an onside kick isn't easy.
No,
that's hard.
Special teams has been actually very solid this year. It's just the two things that we know about. It's the quarterback and the run defense. So let me turn to the quarterback here, because I mean, you know, there's just only so much of this a person can take, you know, and I, you know, we weren't on the forefront of criticizing Jake Browning. I'm not going to say we were like the biggest Jake Browning fans, but I mean, I think history will appreciate Jake Browning, as you were saying a little bit before the show. And we'll look back on those years a lot more fondly. And I did happen to look at his completion percentage led the conference in 2017. He was up there in the top three or four every single year. I mean, he was relatively efficient and just, you know, a reliable quarterback. Dylan Morris, 60% completion rate, is 11th in the conference. Mm-hmm. He is only ahead of Will Plummer of Arizona, and he was 60% last year. So, I mean, this is what Dylan Morris is. We've had 14 games of Dylan Morris, and this is what he is. He doesn't complete a lot of passes. He's not super accurate. And by the way, he leads the conference. This surprised me. Leads the conference in pass attempts this year. He's thrown 311 passes. That's the most in the conference. And his completion percentage is 11th. So that just tells you what you need to know. His 10 interceptions, BT, dead last. Last year he had 3 in 4 games. This year it's 10 in 10 games. And his yards per attempt is down to 6.7. That's also 10th in the conference. Last year he was third with 8.2 yards per attempt. His passer rating, of course, is down. It's 11th. Again, only ahead of Will Plummer of Arizona. I mean, Arizona doesn't even really have a quarterback. They've started like 5 different quarterbacks. And so, I mean, you want to take them out of the mix. I mean, we basically have the worst quarterback in the conference who's been playing regularly this season. So there's just nothing left to talk about. Like, there's nothing I need to see from him. I don't need to see him take a single snap in these last two games. It just doesn't matter. Like, I don't feel that he can win either of these last two games. I do not feel that he can without an elite defensive performance. And where the
rather just
points,
like
getting turnovers,
take the L with Patrick O'Brien or something.
Let's I would see. Rather at least know that we tried something different with Patrick O'Brien. And with Heward, I mean, you know, I realize that they're gingerly bringing him along, but now you're facing a decision. He's appeared in 3 games. If we could go back in time, we would say that Arizona game was just a total waste. He didn't throw a single pass until it was 3rd and 20 or whatever. Great. And so I would love, if it was, you know, if we hadn't had him in that game, to see Sam Heward in these last two games, right? But now we got a decision of whether to burn his red shirt. And that's not a decision I want Bob Gregory to make. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just cannot be making that decision. Sam Heward is the next coach's quarterback. So I would like to see his redshirt preserved, but I'd also like to see him get a full shake, like a fair shot. Let's start him against Colorado on Saturday. Like, I'm fine with that. Or split time with O'Brien, whatever. But, I mean, give him some actual time. I don't need to see Dylan Morris on the field. If I see Dylan Morris on the field, I'm going to start getting agitated.
Yeah, we know what the result
and
is.
You don't like Law Dog when he's agitated. All the
foliage in the Western Hemisphere
needs to be on watch. Yeah.
No, we really don't. Nobody needs to see that.
Nobody needs that.
Dude, I hear you. It's been frustrating. And you know, it's a lot to like in that first quarter, second quarter. I mean, shoot, the first three. I mean, the second half all up is a little sketchy, but like, you know, hey, you get a lead going into the fourth quarter. Where do you want out of this team?
Regression
to the mean.
The offense actually put you in a position to do okay in this game. And Morris, you know, look, to his credit, I mean, I just ripped on him pretty hard. So I will say, in the first quarter, you know, he got you down the field twice. And then at the end of the game, with 30 seconds left, he got you another touchdown. So, I mean, to me, it's really just a consistency thing, right? We're just not getting we don't know what we're going to get. It's like 1:11 left in the game and a couple timeouts. Like, you could drive down the field and win the game and end it, and you go 1 for 4 and throw a pick six. Okay, now the game's out of reach, and you go down the field in 3 plays. It's like, what Dylan Morris am I getting on a given play?
Right, and I'm not even going to try a Hail Mary. Just not even going to try. Just check down and see what happens.
I mean, that goes up there with the punt against Oregon. Is like,
we're
going
to check down and hook and ladder. Like, what are we doing here? Just try to win. Try to win. Yeah, it's frustrating. I really wanted that win for the kids too, for the student athletes, because I feel like they had deserved it. You know, they didn't ask for any of this. It's been wild. But hey, you know what? Let's get into it. We got another 2 coming up this week, and these next 2 I think are critical in that we are a 4-win team that needs to finish off strong and win the next 2 in order to get a bowl game. And we've talked about that cycle of not making a bowl game. We don't want to be a part of that. We're at least favored this week, and who knows what's going to happen in the Apple Cup. But let's get into it a little bit. See you this week, 12 o'clock, Pac-12 Network. Lots of history between these two. UW was 7-0 against CU as a Pac-12 team until that gut punch of a loss. It's totally shocking. One of the more shocking losses we've seen in 2019 in Boulder, 20-15. I mean, the chocolate sundae of a loss and the capped off by the Chris Peterson stepping down as the cherry on top.
Honestly, Mel Tucker, I mean, there's news coming out today that he's working on a 10-year, nearly $100 million extension of Michigan State. And, you know, you look back at that win and go, that was really the time when I think that was kind of their signature win, really, 2 years
ago. It really was. I mean, we made him some money. Look, we've been to Boulder twice and loved it. Saw them in the Pac-12 championship and that amazing. I mean, that was like the dogs are back, 41-10 in 2016. Their glory year is 1990, right alongside of ours. We had a great conversation with the Tylers from Free Ball and Podcast. Let's hear it.
All right, y'all. We had decided to get together with the Dog Pod, friend of the pod here. You know, basically, we're going to make fun of each other because what else do you do at this point in the season? For those who are familiar with the pod, he has been on before in previous years. They even came out to Boulder one time and had a pretty damn good party with us. They're good people. And as much as they can talk crap about us, we could probably talk crap about them because this is two teams that are allergic to scoring. So be interesting to see what we got to say about each other's squads today.
Yeah, we're seeking allergy medication as well, unsuccessfully. Good to see you guys, man. Too bad we're not down at the Pearl District doing this in person. That was a great time.
I remember you guys were down and it rained. Like, I've never seen it rain in Boulder before. You brought the Northwest weather with you guys.
Yeah, we did it. We did a charity tailgate for that, which was a ton of fun and really successful. I think we did the pod at Western Tavern, right? Yeah.
Yeah, your guys' hipsters almost take it up a notch from ours, man. Holy smokes. I thought we had that market capitalized here.
So have you guys adopted a Flabongo yet?
We've been using the Flabongo. You know, I don't know. I feel like the Flabongo market's going to take a hit in the post-COVID era, right? Just passing that thing around from person to person.
You just need more Flabongos, I think.
You got to drink stronger drinks so it sterilizes.
Just sterilizes it. It's the best thing.
I've heard alcohol kills COVID. That's what the internet tells me. So
that's all right. Good. Yeah, we shall be safe then.
So how have you guys been holding up this year? We have a lot of experience in this. Hope we can give you guys some pamphlets.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This has been a tough one. I think particularly like last year going 3-1 for whatever that meant. You know, and like quote unquote winning the North. And we only say that because it just pisses off Oregon so much. We felt pretty good coming in. You know, I think coming back this year, I think the first thing started to come through like recruiting in the recruiting class. And we're typically used to being like top 3-4 at worst in the pack. Comes in 6th-ranked class. You only have like 2 or 3 guys coming in for next year's class, 7th-ranked. That's kind of where people started like, you know, maybe the wheels are about to fall off here. Like, this isn't that good. And then you start losing, like JT Tumalau, you know, would have been the number 1 recruit in the nation, right? You know, a couple blocks away. And from what we hear, not only did he take Ohio State, like we weren't even 3rd, we weren't even 2nd. Like, he was going to go to Oregon if he didn't go to us. So we're losing all of this historic local class. And I think before the season started, that's where people started thinking like, wait a second. Did we make a mistake here? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I think that's the most shocking thing about it all, right? Is, I mean, a lot of people at CU were pretty interested in having Jimmy Lafe as their next head coach as well. The administration probably would have been crushed for not hiring him at the time. Like, it was such an obvious choice that, I mean, I guess I'd be surprised if anyone really saw this coming, especially in the timeline that it's happened.
Yeah, I think there were some people who said, gosh, are we not even going to try? Like, we're not even going to try a national search. But then the names that they're coming up with are names that are like just delusional. Like, we're not going to get, you know, like, you're not getting Jimbo Fisher. Don't worry about all this stuff that's, you know. And so at the time, you're right, he had a ton of juice. Like, he probably could have been a DC at a big SEC program, or he could have been a head coach a lot of places. He had a ton of juice. And so it seemed like the right thing to do, you know, but it's tough looking back on it now. Like, I think everyone's trying to sort of replicate this Ryan Day thing where you could just take a DC into a big program and all this, and they're just going to fall right into it. But how many teams are really doing that? Like, who's taking this OC DC who's never been a head coach anywhere, putting him as a Power Five head coach, and then they're just solid? You know, I don't know. I think we may have overestimated, but I also don't know what choice we had at the time.
So going into this coaching search, you guys are obviously already in a landscape where you're going to be competing, maybe not directly for the same candidates, but the general pool with USC. It seems increasingly more likely that UCLA is going to come open. So these are three obviously big time, especially West Coast, but even really nationally, jobs that people view as places where you can win big. And if, you know, certainly at USC national titles and UCLA, Washington, not really that far behind. Where do you view it? Like, I saw an old CU reporter now in Oregon, Andrew Hobner, tweeting about the best jobs in the Pac-12 today. And I'm kind of curious, like, as Washington fans, what's the temperature of the fan base? Like, are you guys at all worried about the kind of candidates that you guys will be able to attract with the jobs that are open in the market?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some who are just totally delusional and are just like, oh, you know, let's just call Mel Tucker. Let's just call him Mel Tucker. Like, really? Like, come on. I mean, you guys look at the contracts these guys are getting, right? You know, and there's a delusional fan base, but I think there's sort of the middle tier of people. Like, we're all competing for the bell of the ball, right? There's like Dave Klotz's, Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell, Dave Aranda, Bill Napier. Those are the big names, right? So everybody wants, those are the hot names right now. And yeah, like, you're silly if you think you're going to outbid LSU. Maybe the same with USC. Maybe we can come with the same kind of money, but I don't know. We have that recruiting base, and there's going to be some other coaching jobs that are going to come alive as well. Right. So then you're on to your next tier of like, do you have to believe that you could take a Kalen DeBoer, like Norvell, even like Kalani Sitake, and say, hey, look what they've done. Small sample set in a second tier. Can they replicate that for us? I think what's going to happen though, is like the pendulum is going to swing. I don't think you'll see a coordinator. I think Jen Cohen is going to take the safest thing. She's going to take the thing that says, hey, look, I got you the safest thing. Head coach, we pulled, you know, even if it's like Tom Herman out of retirement, something, you know, we got Tom Herman, safe bet. You're not going to fire me for that. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of risk taking.
Safe bets. Definitely wouldn't recommend that on this side of the pod.
Sorry. Oh, man, I mean, you hear everything. There's not a name that you haven't heard.
Not to kind of belabor this anymore, and I know you have questions for us as well, but is there a sentiment among the fan base that's fearful that you're going to fall back in like the Tyrone Willingham days? You had that, and then you had Chris Peterson for what, a decade or so, and a ton of success. Is there a little bit of that fear in the hearts and minds of Husky fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think we ripped the Band-Aid off a lot earlier than we did with Willingham, which was great, and that helped. But it made the job at that point, like, Sarkisian wasn't on anyone's board when we hired him. No one's board. He just came out of left field. But like, who wanted the job at that point? I think we ripped the Band-Aid off a little bit earlier, but this also is not the job it was 2 years ago. So yeah, there's definitely fear where it's like, shoot, it's not just, do we have the money? We've got to pay this buyout. Is there enough alumni-based money who believes in the program to get a big hire? And then can we come out of the doldrums of what the recruiting base is? But I do think we did it early enough that like after Willingham, it was so bad at that point. It was going to take years to recover, but I think we can get back. This is Jen Cohen's job. This is her job is on the line. She's got to make a great hire.
What would that feel like to have an AD who actually thinks their job is on the line?
I hope that's the case. I mean, I don't know if CU's like this, but like our upper campus, it's not like LSU. They just don't want the phone to ring. That's it. Like this whole thing with like, you know, our the kid getting pushed on the sideline, that was like, they don't care as much about losing to Montana, but if there's some controversy and they're getting phone calls, right, that's it. They don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the same with us. Obviously, Carl Durrell shoved a media guy earlier this year, and that was pretty much as hot as the seat has gotten for him.
No, he intercepted him. Didn't you see Rick George?
Right, right.
Told us that he was intercepted.
Yeah.
Was it so, Murray? Did he piss you off? What did he say to you that made him shove you? You were the media guy, right?
Yeah. Well, you know,
that would have been understandable if it was one of us three.
Was it right? Just give him a pass. Well, okay. I got a couple of questions for you guys too for our pod. If you guys have watched any Husky football, like we have shown, there are many unique ways to beat us this year, or just to watch us beat ourselves. What do you think? Like, somehow we're favorites, and obviously, I think CU is going to be the upset pick of the week. Everyone's going to pick CU if you want an upset pick. Like, I'm already seeing it. What do you think is the scenario? What's the most likely scenario where CU beats UW at home? Like, from what you've seen of the strengths of this team.
Man, I don't know if you caught any or any of your listeners caught any of the UCLA-Colorado first half last week, but, you know, we looked pretty damn competent on offense. And against Oregon State, we did as well. Things just completely derailed in the second half. We get out-coached week in, week out. I know you guys are in a coaching transition scenario. I think we win if we actually take chances. We go for it on fourth down. We run some trick plays. We let Brendan Lewis run. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is our coaches don't fuck it up. I don't know if I can hear any pod. I'll chop that out of cell.
That's all right.
I would say we have to run the ball well. I think that's really the tone setter for us. Washington has not been good stopping to run from what I've seen so far this year. Nope. And we've played our best ball when Jarek Broussard gets going. I think that's the important factor for us. When we struggle to run the ball, it kind of all falls apart.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It starts with running the ball before anything else. But another thing that I would say is that a lot of what has kind of pushed Colorado into offensive success recently is the fact that they're not looking at second and 15, third and eight. I mean, we saw it more against UCLA, especially in the second half, but it's been the protection up front. And so if Colorado is going to win this game, of course it starts with running the ball, but it really also comes down to avoiding giving up 3+ sacks in this game. And looking through Washington's wins this year, you're talking about really a minimum of 3 sacks in each of them. And in Colorado showed, if you give up 3 sacks, you're going to beat us. Or if you can sack Brendan Lewis 3 times, you're going to beat us. So to me, that would be a stat that tells the tale almost more than anything, is if we can avoid those situations that result from just getting pummeled in the backfield, that would be something that probably tells me CU's offense was at least competent and possibly successful.
It is interesting. We kind of went through similar games last week. I know ASU kind of did to you guys what UCLA did to us. So we are kind of both coming in, having played a nice front half of the game and just full on collapse in the second half.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And ours was the fourth quarter.
Yeah. That was tough. Class. I couldn't believe the end of the game for you guys is just hard to watch.
Yeah, just regress back to the mean of the year.
Yeah.
What's been the most disappointing position group for the Buffs this season?
There's a dynamic.
Right. I mean, early season, it would have had to have been the offensive line for sure. I mean, because they were an absolute abomination until they fired the O-line coach 3 weeks ago. Since then, they've been pretty solid. So I would say throughout the entire course of the year, it would have to be wide receivers.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there just hasn't been any production.
Well, they're not getting thrown.
To have production as a wide receiver, one must receive the ball.
Well, right. I mean, they've been open at times for sure, but there have been some drops. I mean, Arius is always dropping stuff. Dimitri Stanley in general has just been like that whole thing is weird. Levante Chenault, his whole situation this year has been weird. Like, there were higher expectations for those guys this year.
I think the higher expectations were there because they were expected to receive the ball.
I don't know.
Yeah, like, I'm with Will here.
I don't think people that haven't watched CU all year can fathom how terrible Colorado's quarterback play was until like 3 weeks ago.
Well, right. It's the same thing we said about the O-line. But I think we expected it to be kind of wishy-washy, did we not?
I think we expected it to be wishy-washy, but half of wishy-washy is wishy. And there wasn't a lot of that at all. Like, we were talking about the worst quarterback in the country.
Yeah.
For like 5 weeks, 7 weeks of the season. Hmm. So I would say that, yeah, offensive line probably led to a lot of those struggles. Maybe some of the wide receivers not being as gifted aided those struggles. But at the end of the day, football comes down to, like, more often than not, who has the more dynamic quarterback? And is that quarterback able to make up for mistakes around them? And there are a lot of bad programs in the country who somehow were able to win some games because they had a competent quarterback. Colorado was not one of them until about 3 weeks ago.
I mean, I agree with that. I guess I'm just coming from the place that my expectations for quarterback were fairly low going in.
Do you know how hard you have to try to throw for less than 1,800 yards in a season as someone who started every game? It takes a concerted effort.
And it has. Can I pick offensive coordinator?
I'll allow it. I mean, luckily you don't have to throw against us at all. It's been proven.
Well, I'm sure we will.
But that won't solve the problem.
BT, I know it's been a tough season. What are you looking to see out of the program these last 2 weeks here to give you confidence moving forward? And then another question to kind of tie into that. A lot of times when a coach gets fired, you kind of have like a dead cat bounce. They really show up that next week. This is like a weird situation where it's actually the second game without Jimmy Lake since he was suspended last week. How do you think that psychology might play into the remainder of the season, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're going to hear anything over the next couple of weeks, but this, like, the most important thing is getting this head coach right and getting it done, ideally in a time that doesn't completely screw over the recruiting class for this year. I mean, that's the most critical thing. I'd like to see them. I'm hoping that they're moving on it quickly right now and take care of that. But also, there's no reason our offensive line should be this bad. It was supposed to be even like what Phil Still had it as like as one of his top three offensive line returnings this year, you know, and like it's Jackson Kirkland could have gone to the NFL last year, may have reduced his stock. MJ Ale, Luke Wattenberg, Henry Banavolo, Victor Curran, they're great. They're large. I mean, these are all 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 330. They're big. They should move together. They should gel. And no one can figure out what has gone wrong where, you know, not only can't run the ball, but can't protect. If that line can come together like it did in the first half against ASU or the first three quarters and could just give us a little bit of room, even if we don't win, you know, even if we lose it at CU, I think people would feel a little bit better about it. Sam Heward, if he can get a couple more reps, not just some, you know, arbitrary here, you know, throw a couple passes on the seven of your own seven, but like actually see what Sam Heward's got. Maybe it's against Colorado. Maybe it's in the Apple Cup. And yeah, I mean, look, if you could, even in a year like this, let's assume that Wazoo gets bowl eligible this week against Arizona. If we could still beat them for the ninth year in the row in the Apple Cup, boy, that's sweet. I mean, that's at least some, give you something to hang on to for next year.
I actually have a question for you. And I've always wanted to ask Washington fans this. Like, do grown men really woof? Is that a thing that really happens out in real life?
Like, during the game, do they woof?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, like, oh.
I mean, no. Will, I gotta say, Will, you would absolutely do that if you were a Washington.
I know. That's kind of why I wanted to know. I wanted to know if it would be appropriate for me to follow my instinct.
Yeah. You do hear a little bit of that. You do.
Okay.
I mean, Coach Pete started this thing where when we would sign a recruit, he would just tweet woof. Right. And then everyone's in a scramble, like, who do you sign? And Jimmy Lake kind of continued that. Hasn't been a lot of that, over the last year. But yeah, there's definitely some grown man woofing.
In all seriousness, though, like between Washington State and Oregon, like if you guys had to go 10 years with losing to one and beating the other, who are you picking?
Oh, all over. It's not even close. Like the hate factor between us and Oregon is 100x what it is with Wazoo. It's not even the same ballpark and I think it's different. Like you guys have it with Colorado State a bit, but you know, they're not. You guys aren't on the same plane and they're not in the same conference, whatever. when Wazoo comes to town for the Apple Cup, you got your cousins there, your uncles, your aunts, buddies from high school, whatever. It's a fun tailgate, right? When Oregon comes to town, you know, they're coming in, throwing birds, you know, causing trouble, being a-holes, and it's ugly. And there's things that we don't like about them. And I mean, you saw like what Mario Cristobal said after the game, that like the Washington's everything that's wrong with college football. Dude, look in the fucking mirror, really? We're what's wrong with college football? But like there's it to the highest levels, there is so much animosity between the two programs. And sometimes, frankly, it gets a little out of control, in my opinion, on both sides. Like some of the behavior is a little silly. But yeah, that one has gotten, that one's been an ugly, ugly.
What is it about people from Oregon? Or, you know, I want to dive into the psychology of this. What is it about people from the state of Oregon or those who chose to attend the University of Oregon? What does it say about their character that they are from there or went there to school?
Oh, God, it's tough. Because if you travel around the state, like, I don't know if you guys have been to Bend, Oregon, but Bend's one of my favorite cities in the country. And you go there and everyone's cool as hell. Just great. You know, a lot of places throughout the country you go. And like, I don't have a problem with people from Oregon. But there's something about, and I've, about new money Oregon fans that have come in the last 10, 12 years that don't sort of understand that you can't just write a, you know, that like the estimate is that Phil Knight spent $1 billion of his own money or something and on this team over the years. I don't know how that even adds up, but like they don't understand what it's like and truly believe that it's like they're Alabama's 1A and they're 1B. Like they just don't get it.
I think it's the highlighter green. Anybody who's willing to wear highlighter yellow / green, there's a disconnect in their brain somewhere.
Oh, that's totally. That's one of the big things wrong with Baylor is
highlighter green. Michigan State uniforms that they were wearing the other day. If there's highlighter green / yellow, you're doing it all wrong.
I would agree with that. I mean, it's a lot of flash, whatever. But I don't know. Like my buddies that are Oregon fans or older Oregon fans that went through the nastiness and they get it. They understand that, you know, it's not always going to be like this. Enjoy it while you can. Focus on your own team, et cetera. But yeah, it's an ugly rivalry, man. The Wazoo one, it was when I was growing up, that was a bigger rivalry. You know, that was a bigger one. And since it's completely flipped.
I can't think of a bigger tool in the country than Mario Cristobal. I said this on
big Mario Cristobal haters on this pod.
I said this on some podcast that I was a guest on that like, there is nobody in the country. You know, the Athletic had this great article a couple weeks ago, anonymous coaching quotes about what coaches hate about recruiting these days, right? And somebody was like, I hate the photo shoot. It's fucking meaningless. This, that, and the other thing. And then all I could think about was something I said once, that no coach in the country loves the photo shoot more than Mario Cristobal. No program in the country lives for those 20 minutes in front of a white screen, like Oregon. They are the definition of new money. I'm glad you put it that way. And, you know, I have no room to talk trash. They've been a dominant program over us for 20 years. They've handed Colorado some of its most lopsided losses in the Pac-12. But I also would just say, like, all that money. And where's your title since, like, Vietnam?
Ever.
Like, zero. Like it's like Texas A&M. Bro, it happened before World War II, it's not real. like Italy wasn't a country, man.
Like it was called Rome. Yeah, it's frustrating, man. I mean, I would agree. I don't think he's long for them anyway. I think he's going to be at Miami or somewhere. But I think that was what sat wrong with me is like after this win, and you're right, they've beat our asses, man. We've beat them twice in the last 5 years, and then they had a 12-win run before that. So we don't have a lot to talk, but I don't know. I also think you're number three in the country. You just beat a team that's without, like, as head coach is going out, are we really everything that's wrong with college football? Take your win, leave the stadium, and go home. But yeah, it's a frustrating one. And unfortunately, like I said, I'll admit it on both brings out bad behavior on both sides. I've seen it from Husky fans too.
We know what that's like for sure. this joke would hit a little harder if we weren't the underdogs this week, but you know, if things continue on this trajectory, are you considering changing the podcast name to the Underdog Pod or?
We should be, I don't know if like the Overdog Pod, because like if we've been a safe bet, man, we've been a real safe bet. Hit the under hard against UW. And how many times, even we've won, I mean, what we covered against Arkansas State somehow. But my goodness, I hate to say it. Like, I don't know how we're favored this week either. I don't quite get it. Particularly, what is it, six and a half?
Six.
I gotta say, it is a little bit alarming to watch someone from another program legitimately feel like they're gonna lose to us in football. Like, you guys are down bad.
That's right. Well, I mean, you guys talked about it earlier, but like this about the, like, you know, the like dead cat bounce and coming back. And I think I thought the same thing of like, you can drop X's and O's and think that, you know, Colorado's a better running team. They've got better running backs and that's what their strength is. And we can't stop the run. Like, there's things that should work out in your favor. But like on our side, it's all going to come down to just basically emotion of like, there's two things that are happening in the locker room right now. One is, are they coming together as a team, as a unit, and saying it's us against the world? Or are they saying, God, fuck this, man. All right, I'm with Jimmy. That was wrong. Or shoot, we're going to suck for the next 4 years. What's the transfer portal looking like?
Yeah.
I don't know what that looks like, but if it's, you know, but if it's the former, we're in big trouble on Saturday. Couple questions for you guys. What's your confidence level right now? Carl Durrell finishing out the season strong with one, maybe two wins. And how confident are you that he'll, like, is this just, does he need this year and he's going to be a success in Boulder for 3+ years?
Oh, sorry. Couldn't stop laughing.
Zero.
Zero. I haven't even given you the scale yet. This is zero.
No. I mean, if you took the temperature of Colorado right now, like, I think the fan base is, there was a weird segment of the fan base who thought there was a chance he would get fired after this year, which was always delusional.
Let's be clear that he's only not getting fired because of his buyout number, though.
Correct.
He's earned it.
I mean, you would have to look really, really hard to find anyone that believes that Carl Durrell is the guy for the job in Boulder. I mean, I think people are pretty resigned to the fact that he will get at minimum one more year, in all likelihood two. And we will have to make the gutsiest and luckiest hire of all time for this program really to find a way out. Cause we're already on year 16 of being a bottom quarter power conference program in the country. And you can't go 20+ years without needing to get lucky for things to change. So,
yeah. I mean, breaking it down, I mean, you said one to two wins. One would be a shock. Two is, and there's no way we're going to lose to Utah by like 50. Our entire defense is hurt. Utah is going to do whatever they want with us down the stretch of the year here.
It's hard to impossible to paint a picture in which this turns out well for Carl Durrell.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I mean, we'll see what happens next year. And obviously, you know, the slate is wiped clean. If they go out and have a magical run, then things can change, I guess. But yeah, I would say you'd be very hard pressed to find anyone in the fan base that feels like that's likely.
Ooh, okay. A follow-on question for you. Fear factor Boulder challenge. You guys got to choose. You have three options. A, you line up on the 5-yard line, east end zone, ahead of Ralphie Four. He comes straight at you and you got to take him charging. Okay. B, you finish the entire chimichanga combo at the Rusty Taco, have to drive to Denver and back to Boulder, no bathroom breaks. Not a one. C, you lick the entire length of the bar rail at the sink and eat a powdered donut afterwards.
Hell yeah. All right. So to clarify real quick, I never let this slide. Ralphie is a female.
Oh yeah. That's so right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So Ralphie I always got to throw that out there. I think we're on six now too, but Ralphie Four was a beast. I would never do that. So that one's definitely out for me. Honestly, you know, my lifestyle is what it is. So I'd probably lick the entire bar rail of the sink.
I got to go with squaring up with Ralphie, because here's the thing, man. I'm wide enough that she might just clip like a love handle and it would hurt. I have to imagine that I can get partially like a good angle for myself there. And plus, the amount of times in my life that I've ate you know, burritos, tacos, fucking chimichangas or whatever, and driven 85 miles without a bathroom. Come on, that's any money. And as Tyler Ziskin alluded to, my tongue has been on much weirder things. So, so been there, done that.
I gotta awesome. Say, I like that you turned around the wide body. Like, she has a big target area, Will, and somehow you turned that mm-hmm. into your advantage.
Positive, also, baby.
What I will say is, she's as small as she's ever going to be. So if you're going to do it, today is the
this,
day.
This is the year. This
That's the year true. Take I didn't really down. Consider that. Will picking Ralphie though just reeks, dude. That still thinks he's an athlete.
Yeah.
Safe as possible, even if it's some old name that we think is kind of washed up and done, but they've got a good record. It's going to be, they're both, we're going to have two really safe hires coming up, I think.
One more for BT, so we can let him get back to his unicycle and perhaps blue ribbon. Channeling your inner Petey, is football fun right now?
Oh man, it's always fun, honestly. I still
have I know you haven't been doing it this long.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I guess I think my attitude towards it has changed a lot, honestly, in the last 5-10 years where, you know, I don't let it ruin my week. I know what I'm trying to get out of it as a fan, and I still enjoy the hell out of the tailgates, and we have a great time. We did 2 road games this year, went to get Michigan as just the guys trip. Had a blast there, partially because after Montana, we knew we were going to get our asses kicked, so we had no expectations. We took 70 of us to Tucson this year, dad and kid trip, hung out of the pool and had a blast, had a big tailgate there and still had a good time. And so I wanted to be better. We put a lot of, you know, our time and effort and money into this program, but at the same time, man, I don't know. My attitude on it has changed a lot in the last 10 years. I still have a good time out there.
We should commit to the next time CU goes mm-hmm. out to Seattle, that we're all out there.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
I'll commit. Let's commit.
I like it.
Committed. I'm committed to your next head coach.
That's right. I heard it.
Go Dawgs.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, good to see you, fellas.
We really appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, Law Dog. So you heard it from him. UW favored by 6. They don't have a lot of confidence in their team and are just shocked that anyone else would think that they can win and pull up an upset. All comes down to, as they said, can they run the ball? They've got Jerick Broussard, and if they can run the ball, it sets up things and takes some pressure off of a quarterback. That their offensive line, post firing their last coordinator, has fundamentally changed and is playing a lot better. But all up, he struggles when he's pressured, and that they've lost every game that they've been sacked 3 or more times. Like, that what it comes down to.
Yeah, and you know, this defensive line, this is, you know, we are probably going to go as far as they'll take us on Saturday. I mean, whether they can, like against Stanford, you know, a team that wasn't that good at running the ball, probably the only one statistically at the time that was worse than Washington. You know, and the Huskies shut them down pretty well, including getting that 3-and-out stop at the end that enabled them to get the ball back and win the game. So I look at that and go, you know, there's something there, something to hang your hat on and say, hey, we could turn this around. However, you look at emotionally right now, their coach got fired after the last game. You know, are these guys really going to want to get out there on the road? And, you know, if the first adversity hits, are they going to have what it takes to to stick with it and see it through? Because at home last week behind an interim coach, they, you know, basically kind of folded up their tent. I'm not saying they were quitting, but they just, you know, they kind of just got steamrolled in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I think there's an emotional edge that Colorado probably just has to have being at home, and, you know, wanting to upset a team that's favored to beat them, that's had their own struggles.
It's a dry 56 degree day. So weather's not going to be an issue, even though the grass has posed challenges to us, but the Huskies have won a road game on grass this year already in Stanford. This is a Colorado team that if they are able to do what they did in the first half of UCLA and even in the first half of Oregon, like the offense could get moving if they can, you know, if they can set things up at the run. Look, Dogs favored by 6. Again, I think just like you said, this is all going to come out of the emotional state of the team. Are they rallying together, us against the world? And we've got something to prove here. They probably get a win. If they come into this and they're thinking, hey, this wasn't fair, what we did to coach. A couple guys are already talking about the transfer portal. Should I be thinking about it? Mine's not in there. They're going to take an L, and then the Apple Cup won't matter. or it won't matter for a bowl game. So, hey, we'll be watching on TV. I wish I was there in person. Boulder's one of my favorite college towns. One of the best places to watch the Huskies. Been there twice. Would love to see him again, but let's go Dogs and get that win. Hey, before we start talking about the rest of the Pac-12 though, you want to get into the coaching search?
Oh yeah, I think we need to.
Let's do that. And then let's finish up with the rest of the Pac-12. You talk to me and I've got some ideas as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did mention some names last week and we were kind of in this uncertain place of like, okay, well, are they replacing John Donovan or are they replacing the whole staff? And now we're moving to a place where it looks like most of the staff, if not all of them, will be out of a job this year. So, you know, there's tiers of these guys and there's nobody who's, you know, basically like a perfect fit. They kind of all have pros and cons. I mean, even mm-hmm. I'll start at kind of the top of the online wish list, right? Bob Stoops. You know, coached at Oklahoma for 18 years. They hadn't really done much in the four seasons before he was hired. And then he comes in and wins 10 conference titles, including a national championship very early on, actually. Mm-hmm. And this is also when Texas was doing really well. We forget that now. But Texas was kind of at the top of their game at this time period as well. And Oklahoma, you know, was really rolling. And so Bob Stoops, I mean, he'd be great. But, you know, at 62 years old, and having walked away from coaching, like how much energy do you think he really has to go recruit, to work long nights, you know, especially doing what's essentially could be like kind of a turnaround here. So, even if you could afford to pay him, you know, the money that it's going to cost, you know, there's probably a question of how much heart and desire and all that that he would really have for a program that he doesn't really have a lot of connection to. So he'd be an awesome hire that would definitely win the press conference. You know, I think we'll see. I'd also put in this top tier Luke Fickle. We mentioned him last week, but you know, he took over for Jim Tressel at Ohio State for a season. They were 6-7 while Tressel was suspended. And then he kind of got his next job at Cincinnati, and he has just—he's been amazing since. He's 41-6 in his last four seasons at Cincinnati, and they've got a really good shot at making the playoff, CFP this year, and they're undefeated. So, I mean, he's taken you know a Cincinnati program that was kind of you know middling and turned them into a national contender. So, you know, it's not to say that they're going to be favored. They'll probably be a 2-touchdown dog if they play Alabama or Georgia.
That's right.
But I mean, you know, you got to give him his credit. Like, you know, he's done a lot there. I do think, sure like has. I mentioned last week, he's got the connections to Mike Bone, the athletic director at SC, who hired him at Cincinnati. I think he probably is more of a Midwest guy. He's probably looking for a Big Ten job. He's got the connections at SC. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but I wouldn't think that's a likely choice. Another guy who I think is more possible, but it's still going to be tough, is Matt Campbell at Iowa State. You know, they tied for first in the conference last season with Oklahoma. They lost to Oklahoma in the conference championship game, but then they went and beat Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl. And he's done a really nice job, 38-23 again in his last five seasons there. And at Iowa State, that's a place with no football real tradition, you know. But he's already making over $4 million. He's going to have a big buyout. His contract extends through 2028. So that's going to be problematic. But it could happen. Then other guys we mentioned last week, other Power 5 guys, Dave Clawson at Wake Forest. I mean, you just saw Virginia Tech come open. I think he would probably be more interested in that because he'd only have to kind of move one state over and within the same conference. You're hearing a lot about Dave Aranda at Baylor. You know, basically hanging your hat on, okay, this his second season, they're looking pretty good. His first season wasn't that much to speak of. You know, but he's had a track record as a head coach at the lower levels. Another guy, I got a couple of little wild cards here.
Let's hear it.
One of them is Chris Kleiman at Kansas State. He's done a really nice job. And they have a little bit of football tradition there under Bill Snyder. But, I mean, that's a hard place when you get down and your program's in you know, trying to turn it around at Kansas State. That's a tough job. And he's done a nice job there. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see the Huskies take a look at him. Definitely one of the more gettable guys. And you'll notice a theme here. I'm looking at all these Big 12 schools. I mean, for all these coaches. They're looking down the pike and they're going, Texas and Oklahoma are going to be gone. What's our TV contract going to look like? How am I going to be able to eventually, you know, I mean, even though the league becomes more winnable, are we going to have enough money to keep paying these guys? I mean, I don't see Matt Campbell making $5-6 million at Iowa State in 5 years when Texas and Oklahoma out and they have to renegotiate those TV deals. So, so I think a lot of those guys are probably kind of they're going to test the waters this year, and the Pac-12 would be wise to pull some of these good coaches out of the Big 12 and into the conference. So, you know, a couple guys we did talk about, Kalen DeBoer at Fresno State. He was just amazing in NAIA, winning a couple championships there. Billy Napier, 36-12 at Louisiana, really nice career there. Here's my other wild card for you, BT.
Let's hear it.
I doubt you've even heard of this guy, but what about Chris Creighton of Eastern Michigan? Actually born or raised, at least, in Seattle, Roosevelt High School, class of 87. He went 63-15 at Wabash in Division III. Mm-hmm. He won four conference titles there in 7 years. He went 41-22 at Drake. He's still only 52, but with a lot of head coaching experience at several levels. So here's the thing. He's only 37-55 at Eastern Michigan. But I mean, think about Eastern Michigan and think about any like semblance of a good program you've ever heard come out of there. So it's a really tough place to win and play. And he take out a brutal first couple of years, and he's just 34-34 since then, which is better than you think, I would say. That's an off the radar name.
Is your job as his agent, is that like a side hustle, or are you doing this full time now?
I think he's interesting. I think the Seattle connection is interesting, and he's had a lot of success at the lower levels. So I think that there's something there, but you know, he's definitely not going to win the press conference for sure. And then some other guys that we talked about last week, of course, Tom Herman. You know, personally, I don't love when guys have been fired before, but I mean, you actually look at, you know, his track record's still pretty darn good, even though Texas kind of, you know, it didn't work out. He had some great years at Houston too, or a couple of them. Of course, Wilcox has been getting a lot of press, and I expect he probably will get an interview if he wants one.
Think we just owe him an interview?
Well, I think he, because of the ties he has to the program, I've been hearing that he has supporters like from within the program that are, you know, mm-hmm. in the AD that have Jen Cohn's ear that are supporters of him. Again, he's another guy who's like, he doesn't have a great record, right? He's barely over 500, or is he even 500 at Cal? But again, Cal, that's a really tough place to win, you know, especially with Stanford kind of rolling, doing better in the last 5 years than traditionally they have done. So, I think he's, you know, again, he'll be an upgrade. He's probably going to be in somewhat of the mix. It just depends on if he's going to be a finalist, because the other guys I've been mentioning, you know, you don't know if you're going to, those guys are going to be willing or not able to renegotiate their own contracts, you know, to improve their own positions. Another name we didn't really talk about last week was Jonathan Smith. None of us were real Jonathan Smith haters, but there were a lot of them out there when he was coordinator here. But I mean, look what he's done at Oregon State with Pete, you know, Coach Pete, and the gloves are off and he's running his own show. They look pretty darn good. And that is a tough place to win.
Wow. Okay. So now you're talking, I mean, we can talk till we're blue in the face and then might come out where it's like Steve Sarkisian, that they just find someone that's off the hire. I think that Jen Cohen is going to get the safest choice. Not necessarily the flashiest name, not the cheapest, not the most expensive. She's going to get the safest one. And
the one who checks a lot of boxes in light pencil.
Right. So that if it doesn't go sideways, she can go, hey, you know what?
I did my best, guys.
Yeah, you guys all wanted. Come on. I mean, if Chris Peterson hadn't worked out, no one was going to play. He was the most coveted coach there ever was.
And I saw the Seattle Times today came out and said, oh, you know, Chris Peterson, we're going to list him as a candidate. He walked away from this program. What makes you think he's going to be willing to honor a 4 or 5 year contract, you know, to keep doing this? Even if he were to do it for a couple of years, you know, it's like that's a lot of turmoil to put the program. It's not happening. So just get it out of your mind. It's not happening.
I mean, if he did, he probably would have stepped in now. If he wanted to be back, he would literally be coaching right now.
He probably would.
So,
all right. So you got any others to add to that list, BT?
Well, I've got a little bit of a categorization.
Yeah.
I don't want to go through and you tell me, okay, this is how I look at these guys. First of all, you've got what I consider to be your Rob Lowe's. I'm going to call these your Rob Lowe's. Once was A-lister star, fell off a little bit, retired. People didn't think about him much, but you remember back to those great times. And somebody, some agent.
St. Elmo's fire, BT.
St. Elmo's fire. And then all of a sudden, he's Iron Man. He's in everything, right? There's your Bob Stoops. There's your Tom Herman. Guys that you think, hey, there was a time when this guy was an A-lister. And we're bringing him back. There's one category, okay? I got another category for you. How about the Kurt Warners? Kurt Warner, Super Bowl champion. Who you say, hey, you know what? This guy could do this in the Canadian Football League.
No, it's the Arena League.
The Arena League, yeah. I thought it was CFL too. The Arena League. Maybe. And I think we can turn him into a Super Bowl champion, right? He did it there. I know this is different, but he can do it here. And that is your Kalen DeBoer. Kalani Sitake.
Yeah, I didn't mention Sitake. I think that would be an interesting hire. I don't think he's, you know, he's at his alma mater. They're headed to the Big 12. You know, we'll see, but I think that's another interesting name.
And so that's, I think it is. Now, look, there's money at BYU and they're about to go into the Big 12. And so they could probably, you know, you could make a case for him to want to stay. Now you've got another category. I'm going to call these guys the Freddie Prinze Jr. Now, this is, I think I can take you, Rachel Lee Cook, and turn you into the nerd, into the prom queen, because I know something nobody else knows. And I think you have to have a category of coaches like that. And Justin Wilcox is one of them. In other words, the record doesn't stand for itself, but you got to say, look, you know, I know maybe Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah, that's record, another good.
The record isn't there. Hey, I see the record. I see the record, guys, but don't worry. You give Bronco, you give Justin, you give Jonathan Smith. You barely made a bowl game. You give these guys Husky resources. I'm going to turn Rachel Lee Cook into the prom queen.
So Bronco Mendenhall is a really nice example because here he was at BYU for a long time, but just kind of said, you know what? I need a change. And he went over to, where is he? Virginia, right? In the ACC. And they're playing pretty well. I mean, they're Virginia, so they're not winning the ACC or anything, but he's done a pretty nice job there. But he also has those ties, and we played against him. I mean, he beat us a couple times, right? He would have those ties where he kind of would revere UW and Washington and would know, you know, the facilities and all those things that we kind of hang our hat on and say, this is what makes us a good program, the location, you know, the culture here. He would be familiar with it, and he might go, yeah, that's a good step up from Virginia. Whereas a Clawson who's at Wake Forest might not see it that way.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right. You're totally right. My last category, the Halle Berrys. You want a date? Get in line.
Buddy. Earn it.
The whole country wants a date. This is Halle Berry. And that is, you know, this is your Matt Campbell's, right? Fickle. This is your Fickles. You know,
I mean, sound like Dave Aranda at Baylor.
Dave Aranda. This is your Dave Aranda where it's like, okay, you want to date with Halle Berry? Well, USC and LSU are knocking at the door too. You know, what kind of corsage are you bringing to this date, buddy? So I think, you know, what do you have to believe in these categories? One is like, can you dust off something that was great at that one point in Bob Stoops or Tom Herman and bring them to a second generation of, you know, of strength?
I think you're conflating a little bit Tom Herman and Bob Stoops. Those guys themselves are not in the same category.
Maybe Tom Herman didn't have that.
I think Herman would jump at the chance to come to UW. Stoops is like, you got to kind of like coax him out of retirement.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. But that, you know, like Herman never had what Stoops had, but you still have to go back. You know, Stoops, amazing. I don't think his phone is ringing like a Luke Fickell. Like right. Maybe even a Dave at Randa, like, do you have to take, I just think the one thing I will be incredibly shocked if we see more than all of this, and I didn't even list him, is like a Joe Moorhead or someone else of that nature that is, are we really going to try to convert? I mean, and Joe Moorhead's different because he's been a head coach, but are we going to try to convert someone who's an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator into a head coach again? And if that doesn't work out, Jen's looking for a job.
Well, I mean, exactly. And you mentioned it. Jen's going to go with the safe choice here. She's going to go with somebody who checks a lot of boxes. You can't fire a coach for what is essentially leadership and maturity issues. I mean, that's essentially why he got fired, right? We went through the whole kind of spiel last week. It wasn't that he shoved a player. It was that he shoved a player after all of these other things had happened. And it just, it was too much to bear. So you're not going to go out and hire a first-time coordinator or a first-time coach or even a guy with – I mean, Joe Moorhead, you know, does have some head coaching experience even before Mississippi State. I think it was Fordham or, you know, one of those, again, lower division type places, and he did very well. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's maybe, you know, a little bit safer on the coordinator side, but that's about as far as I expect him to go.
What are the optics for Jen Cohen that – you as Husky Nation feel about hiring Oregon's coordinator as your head coach?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Oregon is succeeding because Cristobal is like a relentless recruiter and makes that part of the culture there. And that's, I mean, that's what's happening the rest of the conference is they're not willing to go as far, work as hard, do as much as he is. Mm-hmm. Right. Joe Moorhead. I didn't say Joe Moorhead's name. In that, right? Joe Moorhead wasn't, that's not his personality. That's not his coach. He works for
That's right.
Got that personality. And so maybe he says, oh, no, no, I can translate that and I can replicate it at UW. But it's like, you know, I just think I'd rather have an original of my own and rather than trying to replicate what somebody else is doing. And so, and also, I mean, yeah, what you're talking about is the optics of hiring the Oregon coordinator. I mean, that's how, you know, it's to me like he's not good enough to be Oregon's head coach, but he's good enough to be our head coach. It's just a bad look for us. And despite even though, you know, he may be a great head coach someday, I agree that it's not happening for that reason.
I want a Halle Berry. I think we end up with a Kurt Warner. But we'll see. We'll see how this thing shakes out. I'm not excited about a Freddie Prinze Jr. I don't want to think that we're too smart and that we see something like, you know, which a lot of people are talking about. Maybe the odds on bet right now is Justin Wilcox. That like we get, here's all the reasons that he is not performing at Cal. So recruiting, he's doing really well. But we were smarter. We know something and we're going to outsmart you.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I just said about Cristobal, like Wilcox doesn't really fit that mold either. Right. And Jonathan Smith, like, you know, I didn't have the feeling that he was a relentless diehard recruiter. You know, when you're the head coach, it is a little different. You're not on the road, you know, every week like the assistants could be. But, you know, I think when Woodward hired Sarkisian, you know, we were coming off a winless season and it just felt like, it felt like kind of hopeless, you know, and Sark injected a lot of energy into the program and recruiting, you know, Woodward knew that was going to be a big part of it. And by year two, his first full class, basically, we had signed Nick Montana. And I mean, of course, we look back at that and go, yeah, well, that was a bust. But that was a huge signing.
It was a huge sign.
We had a bunch of guys who were like, I want to go to UW and play with Nick Montana. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know. That recruiting momentum, and that's just a huge part of this. We have to nail that part of it. And so Wilcox and Smith and even some of the names I probably mentioned, like they're not going to have any of that buzz recruiting wise. They're going to have to go out and earn it.
That's right. You're telling me you're more of a Halle Berry man is what I'm hearing.
You know what? I think you know me too well, BT. You got to line up for and take your big swing. And and as you know, a lot of times you miss. But yep. you have to connect that one time.
You do have to just connect that one time. And even, you know, God forbid she slams the door at your face. Hey, you know, Kurt Warner, whatever. Let's take him. We'll see what we can do. Hey, lots of news. We're going to keep you on top of it. Everybody plays this week. Let's talk about the Pac-12. Everybody plays this week. Friday night. We don't have to wait till Saturday. I'm excited for this. 6 p.m. on Pac-12 Networks down in the Palouse. It's 1-9 University of Arizona at 5-5 Wazoo. Cougs just need a win to go bowling. What do you think?
Am I guessing the line here?
Guess the line.
And then okay, I'm going to take Wazoo by 14.
Ooh, started at 14. It's up to 15.5. Do you still
I mean, that's pretty good after my last 2 weeks.
That's really good. Do you still like it at 15.5?
I like the Cougs in this one big.
Even at 16. Wow. Wow, that's a lot. I'll take the other side of that. Gentleman's bet. I like the other side of that. Saturday after the Dogs kick off at noon, it's the battle for L.A. 1 p.m. on Big Fox in the Coliseum. It's
the Victory Bell.
The Victory Bell. Can you believe it? It's 6-4 UCLA at 4-5 USC. USC, like Cal, oddly has three more chances, three more games. What do you say? UCLA going bowling for the first time in the Chip Kelly era.
I'm going to give this, you know what? I'm going to make it a pick'em.
A pick'em. Okay. Pick'em. All right. So I know you need, you got to take SC then. It's UCLA -3.
I actually like SC on that line for sure. Yeah,
yeah. I'd like to go the other way, just be a contrarian, but I like SC on that as well. I think they play this one tough. If they're going to show up for something, they will here.
Given 3 points in the city of Los Angeles, I like my chances there.
Yeah, I'll take it. It's the big game. It's big game. The greatest stare down in the history of stare downs. 4 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. Cal at 3-6. At Stanford at 3-7. Kind of interesting. Stanford will not go bowling this year. You hear some morons bringing up David Shaw. Like, shut the hell up.
Well, he made $9 million last year.
Yeah, right. So is he like that? To me, is insane.
Yeah, Dick Baird said that on the Honk Show. He was like, "I like Wilcox and David Shaw. Those are his two names." And I mean, look, those guys are good coaches. They've given us a lot of problems. But you know, David Shaw's also recruiting to a much different situation there, and you know,
there's a lot of people I'd rather pay that much money to.
Yeah, I don't think those are real. I don't personally love David Shaw. I know him very well personally, BT, obviously. I'm just not a big fan. Like, I could go without him. Wilcox is a little more interesting, and we saw the results. I mean, he came to a bad defense and made it pretty good.
They have better recruiting classes than we do. Stanford won't go bowling. Cal has to win, oddly. They have three more games this year. They'd have to win them all. Okay, so they got a shot.
I'm going to take Stanford laying one here.
Woo! Okay, so I know which way you got to go. Cal started -4. Now it's down to Cal 1.5.
All right, I'm much closer this week.
Yeah, I'm going to take Cal on that side. You take Stanford, I'll take Cal.
Okay.
Most likely this is the first of two showdowns, 4:30 on ABC. It's 9-1, #3 Oregon at 7-3, #23 Utah. I don't know how you didn't see this line if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I actually did. I heard that Utah was favored by a couple at home over the #3 team. And I thought about taking the Ducks. This is just kind of a stay away for me. I do think this will be a big challenge for Oregon. They have a lot to play for. They've got a lot of momentum right now. But Utah's really turned out to be the class of the South. And Whittingham's a good coach. He's going to have them ready. I mean, I could see this being kind of a low scoring, like, you know, knuckle dragger. And I get the Utes -2 or -3 right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You get a -3.
It's probably a stay away for me. Force me to pick. I guess I'll take the Ducks.
Yeah. That's a tough one too. I probably would as well. Boy, Utah, I mean, their quarterback play is just so much more improved. They got to get their special teams figured out. It's been a bit of a nightmare. I can't quite figure that out. But you know, this is the week where all of Husky Nation becomes Utah fans. It happened a couple times, but go Utes, man! Get that freaking win. Knock them out of this thing. Give somebody else a shot. I want to see Cincy anyway, right? I want to see Cincy in the playoff. The nightcap, Pac-12 After Dark, 7:30 on ESPN. It's 7-3 ASU at 6-3 Oregon State. How say you?
Wow. I'm going to go.
Sir.
Wow, that's tough. I'm going to go. I'll go ASU by 1.5.
ASU -3. You still like them? What do you think? That'd put you on the Beavs, right?
Yeah, but I thought ASU showed a lot of heart last week. I think they're going to be playing a lot of confidence. Then again, second game in a row on the road into the cold, rainy PNW. And the Beavers are going to give them at least a tougher time on the offensive side of the ball than we did. So, you know what? Give me the Beavs. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, I'd like it. I want to get on the other side of that, but I'm all Beavs on that one. Hey, nice slate of games this week. I'd love to see. Let's get this win for the team, for the boys, man. They deserve this. They deserve this win. They didn't ask for this coaching change. Let's get them this W, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a really tough season, obviously. They came in with a lot of expectations. I'm sure they were hearing about it from their friends, their family, their, you know, yep, the fans, all that stuff. And then they come out and lose to Montana. And the whole season, you know, we were talking about it then, was like, it can go one of two ways. And it, you know, you can recover from this and you can be the team that you thought you were going to be, or you can fold up. And I mean, this team folded up, and I'm not going to put that on the players. They, you know, aren't the ones. They have been playing hard. And frankly, our defense has been playing, like, you know, well enough to win this conference. But the coaches just were not there for them. You know, they refused to change. They refused to do the things that coaches needed to do in the face of overwhelming evidence that this team couldn't move the ball. So, you know, it's just been a tough year. So if anything, yeah, I want those guys to be able to, you know, win these last two, win the Apple Cup, so they can leave Washington and say, I never lost the Cougars. We got to a bowl game every year I was here. You know, yeah, it didn't end on the highest note, but I mean, let's give the seniors, you know, that kind of, let's just give them that to play for.
I tell you what, win the next two, hire a coach that gets most people excited. A great bet.
You'll be right back on it in a year or two.
Yeah, man. You're not canceling your season tickets. You're out
you
there.
Honestly, and we haven't even really gotten into the team going forward into the next year. But, I mean, you don't lose a ton. You know, obviously, you're going to lose some guys in the secondary. You're probably going to lose Otten. But Devin Culp has had a nice year in behind him, and he'll be ready to step in. Yep. You know, if you can get quarterback figured out, you get a more dynamic offense. Like, if you can keep everyone out of the transfer portal, you're going to be, you know, you're going to have a lot of these guys back.
You lose McDuffie and Kyler Gordon to the NFL, but you got some
Kirkland
great
to the NFL.
Lose Kirkland to the NFL, but you got some great players coming up behind him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, the thing is, that's not going to be true forever, right? I mean, like, on the DB side, yeah, I want to see Jacoby Covington, right? I want to see, you know, some of these other guys who...
Michelle Powell continue to play, you know?
Michelle Powell's played pretty well. And, you know, you have the emergence of Carson Bruner. Like, this D could still be pretty darn good next year if they are able to kind of find that right mix on the D-line. It would be really helpful and awesome if Zion Tubeloa Fatui, you know, came back and said, you know what, torn ACL, I didn't raise my stock very well, and, you know, I'm going to come back and try to be a first rounder. He could, if he did that, I mean, this team could, you know, this team could threaten.
That's right. Hey, it starts with these next two games. We'll be watching on TV. To the guys at Free Ballin' Podcast, wish we could be down there with you in Boulder celebrating, but we're going to have to settle for TV this time. Let's get a couple wins here in a row, huh? Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Woof.
Oof.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.